So my name is Brittany Humphreys, and I'm your host for the show. Thank you for tuning in to the second episode of Between the Lines. Today's episode will explore the pressing issues in Canada's private drug insurance landscape and how public policies may affect the provision of private drug coverage in the future. There's a perception that the majority of Canada's healthcare coverage is financed publicly, but particularly when considering spending on medicines, Canada is a mixed market. According to the Canadian Institute for Health Information, public insurance covers less than half of the prescription drug costs. The remaining costs are paid largely by private drug insurance providers, and to a smaller degree, patients who pay directly out of pocket for all or some portion of their drug costs. Unlike public payers, whose goals are to provide access to necessary medicines while managing public drug budgets, private payers have a slightly different perspective on reimbursement. Employers view private drug benefits plans as part of their compensation package and value their employees maintaining their health and wellness to remain healthy and productive members of their workforce. Despite some differences in objectives, the populations they serve, and some of the cost pressures they're facing, both public and private payers have an important role in providing Canadians with timely and affordable access to prescription drugs. And like public payers, private payers are also subject to the effects of major, nationally instituted health policy reforms. At the beginning of 2020, the Canadian market access landscape for medicines was facing some big changes. Patented medicines pricing reforms were underway. The federal government had signaled its support for the creation of a national pharmacare program. And there was talk of creating a national formulary for drugs for rare diseases. And while the COVID pandemic brought the world as we know it to a grinding halt, there is a need to start thinking about a way forward and the impact that these policies will have on the private drug insurance community. I'm delighted to introduce Chris Bonnet as our guest for today's episode. Chris is the principal consultant at H3 Consulting, a company that specializes in bridging health issues between governments and the private payer community. Chris established H3 Consulting in 1999 after 18 years of experience in underwriting, reinsuring, selling, and marketing employee benefits. Chris has been a volunteer director on the boards of three health services organizations and has been a member of the advisory board for the Sanofi Canada Healthcare Survey since 2003. He holds a PhD from the School of Public Health and Health Systems at the University of Waterloo. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Brittany, thanks very much for having me. I'm delighted to have a chance to speak with you this afternoon.
We've got a lot of topics to cover today, so I think I'm just going to dive right in with our first question, which is, you know, in your view, what is it that makes the private drug insurance industry such a large and important piece of the prescription drug access framework in Canada?
Well, I guess it's really history. Like so much, we have to look back at the early days and the initial beginnings of private insurance to figure out why it plays a role now, because it could have been a very, very different outcome if federal government, in particular policy decisions, had gone a different direction. So first, we've had a succession of federal governments ever since World War II that have actually talked about implementing pharmacare and in the context of a broader national health system. We weren't alone in that. The United Kingdom had exactly the same thing. They actually launched a much more comprehensive national health service in 1948. And like Canada, that was a way to kind of reward the population and reward all who had given so much over the Second World War and to protect them and their ongoing health needs, physical, mental. But that national health service was far more comprehensive than what ultimately happened in Canada. The first step, which was hospital insurance, occurred 10 years later in 1957, and then medical physician coverage followed in 1966. But all of that did nothing to touch drugs. That was a deliberate policy decision because governments were afraid of the cost of drug insurance much more than hospitals and physicians. Or you could think that perhaps the lobby groups, the advocacy groups for hospitals and physicians were far more powerful than what at that point was a relatively small pharmaceutical industry with a much smaller number of products that would affect the Canadian population. So Eventually, though, it became clear that we needed to have something. And so in the 1970s, provincial governments started drug programs, but only for their seniors and for social assistance recipients, which were seen as the most vulnerable parts of society. And everybody else was left to their own doing. Well, drugs were already relatively expensive. They were described that way in the Hall Report of 1964. And that cost issue has continued to run forward to the present day. When workers and their families were left uncovered by governments, employers and private insurers stepped in to try to fill those gaps. You've heard that term recently when it comes to pharmacare, and create coverage for workers and their dependents. So 50 years later, we have private insurance that covers over 22 million Canadians. It now pays more for prescription medicines than provincial drug programs do. And it is massively important to the entire landscape of medical and health coverage for Canadians. And yet, the irony, and this is what came through loud and clear throughout my doctorate work, was that the private insurance side of it is very, very much unstudied, unsolicited, uninvited, if you will, to policy discussions around what ought to happen with drug insurance for all Canadians. So if you have drug insurance covering more than half the country, private drug insurance covering more than half the country, but they don't have a seat at the policy table, and they're not really participating as equal partners at tables like the Pan-Canadian Pharmaceutical Alliance, on patented medicines, biosimilar policy for drugs for rare diseases. I mean, we're missing some important inputs and really some very important capacity. We wouldn't ever think about doing insurance without patients and without health professionals there. And I would argue that the private payer community is just as important and ought to be there as well. So we're still wrestling with the place of private insurance. We still have people in this country that don't have enough coverage. And so although we've moved to everything COVID, this problem hasn't been solved, and this issue is only going to get larger as we see more gene and cell therapies at prices that are certainly six figures and often seven figures. Nobody but probably the federal government can afford to do important new policy work in those areas.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, you know, private coverage affects a different demographic. So I'm just wondering, you know, from your perspective, what are the most pressing issues facing the Canadian private drug insurance industry today?
I suppose, you know, because the working age population is different than seniors, and workers have somewhat different needs and different health status, quite frankly, than those that cannot or do not participate in the workforce. There are some differences between private insurance and public insurance, most notably provincial plans. The most important difference, I guess, is that provincial governments run their drug programs on a budget, and that in coming in on that budget is probably the most important consideration. And so they make very deliberate economic and clinical decisions around which drugs are covered and which aren't, based on budgets, based on their needs of their populations, which are not the same as the employed workforce. On the other hand, employers, private insurers, they want drug insurance to also fulfill a need to enhance productivity, performance, to get people back to work when they have disabilities or extended absences, to help them manage chronic diseases. And as we found with COVID, infectious diseases as well. So we have a different population. And so we have somewhat different needs. And within the private world, I would say the biggest need is probably to deal with the pooling question. We have pooling that occurs at the policy or client level, where they ask insurers to kind of take the risk above a certain dollar threshold and pool it with similar rare claims from across their books of business. And so that helps sort of dampen the effects, the volatility of what could happen one year but not a next, particularly for very small employers. There's another pooling mechanism that occurs at the industry level, where they shift high-cost recurrent drug claims among the members of the insurance industry according to their market share. Now, both those are broken, and they've been broken for a number of years. And so the easy answer is, well, we ought to fix drug pooling. because absent a national fix, absent a national pool, we have a whole bunch of insurers with small pools that are not powerful enough to deal with the volatility of claims of specialty drug claims, claims for patients with complex and significant serious health issues, and of course these new emerging drugs for rare disorders for gene and cell therapies. So we could stop there, but I think that pooling is mostly a tactical issue and it requires a tactical solution. Well, the good news is we've got one. It's been in Quebec for over 20 years. It is a much broader pool, covers all employers except those with over 6,000 employees, which is a very, very small part of the employer landscape. And it works. It's regulated and it requires the industry to report publicly to the Minister of Health in Quebec. I think that's a good model that could be adapted across the country. We haven't seen that happen yet. I think the other thing, though, that is more strategic for the industry is that they could take, in my opinion, and I don't work for insurers anymore and haven't for some years, I think they could take a more of a kind of a social responsibility for managing drug insurance and access to important drug products and medicines. I think that fits. It's not that big a stretch. Again, if you've got over half the population already covered for drug insurance by private insurers, the idea that they ought to consider national policy and really be involved in national policy is not really hard to imagine that they could easily step into that. They've got huge heft. They've got a lot of employees. They've got expertise. They've got systems. And they've got this massive stake. And so I think what's missing in drug insurance today is leadership. And I think, honestly, the private insurance industry and even the entire community, which would include advisors and employers directly, could play a far more important role in leading this country towards better drug policy, towards more integrated drug programs, towards strategies for, as we might talk about later, drugs for rare disorders. If we wait for government to do all this, history has told us that we wait a long, long time and we get often partial solutions that can be waylaid by one thing or another, an election, a pandemic, you name it. We can't seem to make progress here. And so I'd really love to see private insurers and the private payer community step into some of these important undone drug-related issues and help fix them. They can't solve them all. They can't do it alone, but they could be the catalyst to start some important discussions and draw in other crucial stakeholders like provincial governments, federal government, health professionals, and patients without exception ought to be at that table. And, you know, in my mind, why wouldn't the brand and generic drug industries also have a seat there? Because they have an important role to play, obviously in access, in research and development. We could do this, I think, in a lot more comprehensive way, but it needs somebody else to lead. And I'm quite convinced, actually, that's something well within the capacity of the private insurance industry.
When you talk about social responsibility and, of course, you know, a national program, you know, I can't help but think of PharmaCare, which is something, you know, that we've talked in Canada. It's been a major focus of Canadian health policy for decades, and it does seem to have gained some momentum within the last few years. What has been private payer involvement in that to date? And, you know, how would implementation of such a program affect the private, not only the private payer community, but certainly privately insured Canadians?
Yeah, I think if we succeed in creating more of a social responsibility, not only with private insurers, but maybe with all of the stakeholders involved in this, that we won't be talking just about the impact on the private insurance industry, but we will be talking about the impact of ideas and issues and, in fact, problems like National PharmaCare on all Canadians. The private insurance industry has been very involved in National PharmaCare, as has the pharmacy industry, obviously the pharmaceutical manufacturing industry. Patient groups, again, have been front and center. Labor was heavily involved and was an important catalyst to get PharmaCare into the government agenda and part of the Standing Committee on Health, their deliberations in the House of Commons in the early parts of the first Liberal government that began in 2015. So private insurance has been in this, and they have a massive stake in it. As I said, they've got this big financial stake. They've got this big human stake because of the number of people that they cover. But it's important to recognize that certain types of PharmaCare are going to serve the insurance industry and other types are going to essentially shut them down. The model that will, that gets the most traction in Canada is a single payer, publicly administered and publicly financed health and drug insurance system. In other words, drugs could be tucked under Medicare. That's been where all of the academic literature has been. It's where most of the think tanks go. It's certainly where the House Standing Committee on Health went. It's where the Advisory Council on the Implementation of National Pharmacare went, a single payer publicly administered program under Medicare. Now, if you do that, notionally, of course, there's not a role, or certainly not as big a role, for private insurance. In fact, when the Parliamentary Budget Officer priced a Quebec-based drug insurance formulary as part of the House Standing Committee in 2017, you know, the assumption was that private insurance would just disappear. But what was interesting is that in that costing, over $4 billion of previously privately insured eligible drug claims disappeared when we took on a public single payer system. And that's using the most generous formulary in the country, which is Quebec's formulary. So if we can use the most generous public model and we still eliminate $4 billion of private spending, it means that that probably isn't an adequate model to address the needs of most Canadians. Now, I'm not going to suggest that every drug should be paid for, but in important decisions have to be made so that the most the highest valued products are paid for and others probably won't be. But that's a blunt instrument to use a provincial formulary and assume that it will cover the needs of everyone. It doesn't.
And I have heard, you know, that, you know, thousands of drugs that Canadians currently access, as you said, would not potentially be covered through the proposed PharmaCare plan. If we didn't go with that model, what would the private payer community want to see in a national PharmaCare plan?
Right. Crucial. First of all, I want to address that comment about formularies, because I think there's a fair amount of misinformation or misunderstanding around when you get to compare private formularies, which might provide 12,000 DINs with a provincial formulary that covers 4,000 or less, or in Quebec's instance, more DINs. There was important work done by the PMPRB using the NPDUIS database a few years ago, and several hundred drugs, I think roughly 700 drugs, covered a massive amount of the spending. So it's a little artificial to say, well, the difference between 4,000 or 5,000 DINs and 10,000 will affect every Canadian. It won't, because the vast majority of Canadians are dealt with a formulary of several hundred drugs. But we also need choice. And we also understand that patients don't respond to just one drug in a class. And so there has to be something better. But it isn't all private, and it isn't that all provincial plans are bad or wrong because their formularies are smaller. The model that would keep private insurance involved is social insurance. And that's something I looked at quite extensively for my doctorate. I looked at social insurance systems in Germany, the Netherlands, and also the drug system in Quebec, which is modeled on social insurance as well. Now, social insurance is not a term that most people use, or because it's called social insurance, it might be seen as a bit pejorative, but our Canada Pension Plan, Quebec Pension Plan, workers' compensation boards are all run on a social insurance model. So we're familiar with it. It works well in this country, and in health systems in Europe, it works very, very well too. The important thing about a social insurance system, it has a specific regulated role for private insurance. And in fact, you would argue that private insurance is the dominant payer or the dominant model in that private insurance provides coverage to workplaces, to employers. Employers and workplaces in turn split the cost, which is essentially a taxation, between the employer and plan members and workers. And they are the major contributor to health insurance in those countries. It doesn't work through general taxation like the Canadian model does. But there's still some general taxation model in there because you've got to top up the system. Otherwise, contributions get too high. And there is a portion of the population, clearly, that isn't in the workforce. Older people, children, disadvantaged, disabled, not in the workforce. So it makes sense there's some public general taxation money in there as well. But that model works because it is transparent, because the roles of private insurance and employers and in fact, plan members and patients are clearly outlined and prescribed. Formularies are almost often, if not identical, between public, like everybody gets the same. And those formularies are generally robust. And the interesting thing is that many of those European countries also have very robust drug manufacturing industries. And so it demonstrates to me that we can have a more cost-effective drug insurance system, a robust drug manufacturing research and development industry, and we can provide high-quality universal coverage to all 38 million Canadians. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that we ought to automatically transport a European system, a German system, a Dutch system to Canada. We can't do that in anything, but there's lots to learn from those models in other countries. Private insurance in and of itself should not be dismissed out of hand as irrelevant or antithetical to our public health insurance system. Properly regulated, it can do a great job. It provides more choice, and it can do so on a very cost-effective basis.
Well, PharmaCare is like certainly a huge, you know, policy form that we're talking about in Canada. I'd like, you know, to ask you a bit about the rare disease strategy as well, because I know that plays into it as well. How do you think private payers fit into a rare disease strategy?
I think that the private payer community, which would include insurers, employers, benefit advisors, pharmacy benefit managers, and probably even labor and health professionals for that matter, should have an important sort of discussion role in a national strategy for drugs for rare diseases. Honestly, there's not much in drug policy or drug programs that get universal agreement, mm-hmm. but drugs for rare diseases is one of those rare places, ironically, or perhaps fittingly. Everybody agrees that this is a problem that should have been solved a long time ago. And virtually everybody agrees, in my experience and in my research, that it is something the federal government ought to take on. Provinces don't want the risk. Those products are way too expensive, even for provinces. And if they're too expensive for provinces that have tax revenue basis, you can imagine that employers and insurers don't want those liabilities either. And in something that has a relatively small number of products and doesn't affect the majority of Canadians, this would be an ideal place to have a much more integrated national policy. So insurers would want to be at the table. Again, I actually think that insurers could be a powerful catalyst for this. I think they could actually get this off the ground and running alongside some obvious partners, which would be patient groups, which would be provincial governments. And they could help get this going to a point where the federal government could again pick this up. Prior to COVID, we imagined that a strategy for drugs for rare disorders would be well constructed even by the end of this year, 2020. That's not gonna happen because of COVID. DRDs could be picked up again before the end of the year, but why wouldn't or couldn't the insurance industry lead? They have a stake in this. They would want to see those products go somewhere else, and I think their plan sponsors and plan members would like to have a national strategy and a set of national standards. So again, it doesn't depend on where you live or work, where you get access to those drugs. It depends on medical need, and there's adequate financial capacity to make sure that patients who have the best chance of success on those products get access and get timely access to them.
Mm-hmm. On our last episode, we discussed yet another major policy reform in Canada, and that was the pending patented drug price regulation changes. How does the federal government's intent to reform patented medicines prices affect private payers?
Well, the easy answer, there's usually an easy answer and a tougher sort of between the lines answer to all of these questions. But the easy answer is that insurers, the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association, is on the record saying that they fully support PMPRB reform. They've said for some years now that they would like to see lower drug prices and that the PMPRB is one important mechanism to achieve that. So is the PCPA, the Pan-Canadian Pharmaceutical Alliance. And insurers have wanted to be closer aligned with both of those bodies for some years now. CLHIA is all for this. I think that there You know, we've got yet another consultation just launched on the guidelines, which is the implementation, the working face of PMPRB reform. And maybe that gives us an opportunity to finally get some important external stakeholder views into that issue. Right now, I think, you know, they haven't fully reflected the input they've got from a lot of highly qualified stakeholders. For instance, I think on a very practical level, PMPRB has gone 30 years without major reform. You know, if we took another year or 2 years to gradually implement new prices for grandfathered patented medicines, that would help us ensure that it's done properly, transparently, and that there aren't the sort of effects that have worried stakeholder groups on both sides of the table for this. The pharmaceutical manufacturers and a lot of their advocates are very much afraid that it'll dry up research and development and delay or completely deny access to effective new drugs in Canada. I don't see it that catastrophically. And I think there are lots of drugs that are maybe not going to be missed. What I'd like to be sure is that if we reform PMPRB and ultimately our drug insurance system, that Canadians have access to the most efficacious, highest value drugs that are going to solve their health problems. Again, that doesn't mean every drug, and it doesn't mean access at any price. It does mean a careful evaluation. I think, you know, we could see a delay in implementing those new prices for all those patented drugs, and again, careful evaluation of what's actually happening in the market and a level of transparency so that it isn't just the government that knows what's happening. It's the entire stakeholder ecosystem, if you will, that has a stake in making every part of drug system reform effective on balance for 38 million Canadians. And it isn't all one stakeholder view or another. And we have to stop this black and white dichotomous, it's you're either for it or against this perspective on drug reform. There's lots of middle ground. There's lots of effective ways to get reform that serves the broader public interest. And everybody's going to have to be prepared to give a little for that. I hope we see some leadership and some compromise and most importantly, I think a forum to have these kinds of discussions, whether it's PMPRB reform, drugs for rare disorders strategy, pharmacare, you name it. We better get our act together because it isn't up to government to do all the leadership. We know that doesn't work. It is up to each of us to take an important role, I think, in pushing this forward and keeping very much in mind the need of plan members, patients, the 38 million Canadians that actually look to others to solve important complex problems like access to drugs.
Mm-hmm. And in, you know, discussing these reforms, I'd be remiss not to acknowledge COVID-19 and the impact it will have. Management of the pandemic seems to have eclipsed all other public policy concerns and initiatives in recent months. What has changed in the post-COVID world when it comes to these non-COVID national health policies? And what does it mean for, you know, the future of private drug insurance in Canada?
Well, I think, as you said right in your opening remarks, Brittany, COVID has pushed everything else off the table. And for good reason for now. This is a crucial issue. It's led to the death and disability and illness of way too many Canadians at this point, and of course, citizens of the world as well. So, and this problem isn't going to be solved quickly or maybe even completely. Maybe we have second and third waves. Maybe we have some modification of the virus and it comes back and bites us in a different way. Who knows? But I think what's come out of this is that it's okay for, you know, big reform areas in drugs to be pushed aside a little bit because COVID has shown immense vulnerability in our long-term care sector and an important underinvestment in public health, particularly surveillance, data collection, our ability to test people, to trace people, all of the epidemiological stuff that, you know, nobody's paid any attention to for many years. Those are the big issues, and those are the first things we got to learn from COVID. We learned from SARS in this country and other virus pandemics or epidemics that have happened in the world, that this is one of a series. We're going to have this again. So let's solve these two problems. Now, I don't think that we ought to do just one thing. I think we could do a DRD strategy. I think we could work and ought to continue to work to get PMPRB reform in place now for January 1, 2021. But, you know, COVID is the thing. We better deal with it now, because if we drop the ball there, there's far more harm that will come to us far more quickly. And these other things we ought to be able to manage along the way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'd like to close out the podcast episode with a question we ask all our guests, and that is, why are you passionate about this topic?
Well, I hope some of that passion has come through in my voice. I got bitten with this over 20 years ago. I was working for the drug insurance industry. I was working for Sun Life at that point. And I got invited to participate as an industry member for the National Forum on Health. And they did a pharmacare thing in Saskatoon in January. Probably not the most appealing place to be at that time of year. But away I went, and I was just sucked right into it. Here we had a massively important topic, one that had already been in the public eye for decades, hadn't been solved. It taught me that health insurance isn't just about data and numbers. It's a powerful emotional response among people. And that emotional response sometimes overrules logic, reason, rationale, and maybe that's part of why we haven't achieved everything. So I saw that on full display at that National Forum on Health session. As you know, and as I've mentioned, it was an important part of my doctorate, so I spent some years examining it very closely. And that's given me lots of opportunities to speak about it, to write about it, and every time I do that, I get enthused again and feel like, you know, this is complex, this is an important challenge. If it was easy, we would have solved it by now. But it tells me that it is solvable, that we can bite this off in small pieces and achieve important things. And I haven't seen that yet. So I suppose the last thing that makes me passionate is a stubborn streak. you know, this just won't go away, and it ought not to go away. We have too many people that don't get access to the drugs they need at a price that our system and our employers and our governments and our patients can afford to pay. This isn't, as I say, all one or the other. There is a nice balance that we can classically strike between access, cost, and quality in drug insurance, as in all other things. And I'm, even at my ripe old age, real happy to keep chasing that goal and hope that I can make a small contribution towards achieving it.
Thanks, Chris. That concludes this episode of Between the Lines. Thank you for listening. And once again, a big thank you to Chris for being our featured guest. Subscribe to the Target Pharma newsletter by emailing targetpharma@pdci.ca to keep up to date with the latest news in Canadian pharma. Today's podcast was brought to you by PDCI Market Access, Canada's leading pricing and reimbursement consultancy.